Once again, I'm delighted to welcome Deborah Heath to the studio. She's always got ideas about what books we should discuss, what titles we should debate, and she suggested one that we only just missed the deadline, as it were. It's called Halloween Party by Agatha Christie. Now, as Deborah knows, Agatha Christie is not my favourite, but we'll battle with that. I'm not very good with whodunits and crimes, but I think you've got some good sound reasoning why I should be reading far more of hers.
Everyone has to have their guilty pleasure. I look down my nose very much on chick lit, and in fact, most of the things that my friends read in book clubs, I was in a book club and had to leave, even though I set it up because I'm a snob. So I do understand the feeling that you've only got however many hours a week to read. Some people only have minutes, and you may as well maximise that by reading something that's going to give you the result you want. What I try to do, and this is partly driven by the fact I can't physically read anymore. So an audiobook, as most of the listeners know, takes longer, takes much more commitment than a paper book. And what I tend to do is listen to something a bit heavier, a bit more challenging, like Dickens, for instance, and then I will alternate that with a Christie. And my husband and I have always liked Christie's, but about 10 years ago, we started reading them in order. It was great fun going to antique shops and old bookshops and finding as many green Agatha Christie's, you know, the old penguin ones, as possible. So we've got a lovely crime bookshelf. So we've been working through them in order, and she started in the 20s and finished in the 70s. So we are nearly at the end. And as well as being jolly enjoyable, it's also been a very interesting social commentary. And particularly in the way she looks at young people, which at the beginning is all very light-handed, they're very romanticised, they're very beautiful. And as she goes on and she becomes disillusioned with life, particularly when the swinging 60s starts, then her view is changed and they're all suddenly very aggressive drug dealers and they have terrible ideas and terrible haircuts. She often talks about men being like peacocks, which she doesn't quite understand. And I think the first extract is interesting because it talks about the sort of people that would be attending the Halloween party. And I feel that had she written this book at the beginning of her career, then she would have described the characters differently and indeed written them differently. But this extract shows Ariadne Oliver, our heroine, who we will talk about later, discussing the pros and cons of modern youth.
Preparations for a children's party usually give far more trouble to the organisers than an entertainment devised for those of adult years. Food of good quality and suitable alcoholic refreshment, with lemonade on the side, that to the right people is quite enough to make a party go. It may cost more, but the trouble is infinitely less. So Ariadne Oliver and her friend Judith Butler agreed together. "What about teenage parties?" said Judith. "I don't know much about them," said Mrs. Oliver. "In one way," said Judith, "I think they're probably least trouble of all. I mean, they just throw all of us adults out, and say they'll do it all themselves."
"And do they?"
"Well, not in our sense of the word," said Judith. "They forget to order some of the things and order a lot of other things that nobody likes. Having turfed us out, then they say there were things we ought to have provided for them to find. They break a lot of glasses and other things, and there's always somebody undesirable who brings an undesirable friend. You know the sort of thing. Peculiar drugs and, what do they call it? Flower pot or purple hemp or LSD, which I've always thought just meant money, but apparently it doesn't."
So she's changed her appreciation of young people as she's gone through. And she does nonetheless set characters going. And there are major characters like Poirot, who is in this one, and then there are Miss Marples in the other series and so on. And I felt that it had gone a sort of a chapter in, and then there was a deep sigh because here was Poirot. Everything was going to be all right again. Mm. Is that the sort of thing that happens every time? You know, there's a problem set up, then we encounter...
Not necessarily. And in fact, my favourite Agatha Christie's are the ones that really buck the trend. There's a very good early one called The Secret of Chimneys, which is more of a spy thriller. And then there's the Toppy and Tuppence duo. They're a husband and wife team. And actually, that's the very interesting point because they start in the 20s when they're young and full of energy. And one of her last books, Postern of Fate, was when they were in their dotage. Those books tend to follow a slightly different framework. And in fact, some of the later Poirots, he's barely in at all. And you think, oh, he's not going to appear. And then he does appear quite near the end. You think, interesting. She really doesn't like him anymore, does she? She's brought him in quite late.
But she's introduced another character who writes.
Ariadne Oliver is, in my opinion, a mouthpiece for Agatha Christie. She is a detective fiction writer, and she usually comes into these very bizarre situations where someone is murdered. She's a very distracted person. She always is experimenting with new hairdos and eating apples and leaving them lying around all over the place. So she needs a friend like Poirot, who has a logical mind, to help her sort them out. So I think, yeah, Agatha was just getting really fed up with Poirot, so she needed to bring in another character to help him sort of... It is nice because they spar, you know, they
don't
agree.
Does she make it more complicated than it would otherwise be? I mean, and this is my problem with this genre. I mean, you mentioned, one of the Agatha Christie's more like a spy story. Mm. I can cope with spies stuff. I love John le Carré, particularly the early stuff, but I struggle with the whodunits. Millions and millions of people love Agatha Christie, so I must be wrong. And billions of copies have been sold. Does Poirot have a... Is he really so central to this story?
No, I don't think he is. I mean, it's interesting you say, does she complicate it a bit? In the early books, he has Hastings as the well-meaning sort of, by Jove, what's going on, Poirot? I don't understand this. And yes, in a way, Ariadne Oliver is like that. She's his sidekick. She looks at things in a different way. But she's actually very clever in her own way and is quite a powerful female figure, actually. And they do definitely work together. I don't think this is Agatha's best book. I've suggested it for this discussion because I think it's quite a good example of how her style changed. I have a few issues with the structure of this particular book, so I don't think it's the best example. I don't think it's the first one you should be reading. So.
Is there not a traditional structure in all Agatha Christie?
I think there are some parts of it that are a bit lazy, but yes, you could say, very roughly speaking, you'll have the setup, you'll have the murder. This murder comes a little earlier than usual. And then the detective will come in. Then there'll probably be a second murder. Not always, but often. If you're really lucky, there'll be a third. But that one will come quite near the end, and then it'll be wrapped up. So yes, there is a general formula. But what you've got to remember is Agatha Christie was really one of the first. So if you're getting bored of the genre now, that's because a lot of people have come after her.
The standard seems to be you establish a character who's usually a policeman or a policewoman, and then you develop that character and that becomes a television series. Go back to the beginning. We've got, because we're going to establish that there is a murder fairly early on. How do they set the scene for
the murder?
I
mean, this is quite interesting. As I said, I do believe Ariadne Oliver is there for Agatha Christie to let off steam. So this extract is interesting because Agatha was getting really bored of Poirot, and she was also getting very bored of people at parties saying to her, why did you make him Belgian? He's French, isn't he? No, he's Belgian. Why is he Belgian? And she didn't know. It was just a random idea. So Ariadne Oliver's character, he's a Finn, and Ariadne doesn't know why he's a Finn, and she wishes he wasn't a Finn. She wishes he was French or German or something she knew a bit more about. So I think you can really see the autobiographical bits coming out in this extract. And it also sets up the murder. And we're not ruining anything for the readers here because the murder happens really right there at the beginning.
I read one of your books, said Anne to Mrs. Oliver. The Dying Goldfish. It was quite good, she said kindly. I didn't like that one, said Joyce. There wasn't enough blood in it. I like murders to have lots of blood. A bit messy, said Mrs. Oliver, don't you think? But exciting, said Joyce. Not necessarily, said Mrs. Oliver. I saw a murder once, said Joyce. Oh, don't be silly, Joyce, said Miss Whittaker, the schoolteacher. I did, said Joyce. Did you really? Asked Cathy, gazing at Joyce with wide eyes. Really and truly see a murder? Of course she didn't, said Mrs. Drake. Don't say silly things, Joyce. I did see a murder, said Joyce. I did. A 17-year-old boy, poised on a ladder, looked down interestedly. What kind of a murder? He asked. I don't believe it, said Beatrice. Of course not, said Cathy's mother. She's just making it up. I'm not. I saw it. Why didn't you go to the police about it? Asked Cathy. Because I didn't know it was a murder when I saw it. It wasn't really till a long time afterwards, I mean, that I began to know it was a murder. Something that somebody said only about a month or two ago suddenly made me think... Of course, that was a murder I saw. You see, said Anne, she's making it all up. It's nonsense. When did it happen? Asked Beatrice. Years ago, said Joyce. I was quite young at the time, she added. Who murdered who? Said Beatrice. I shan't tell any of you, said Joyce. You're all so horrid about it.
usually the victim is a despicable person, often turns out to be a blackmailer or a bigamist or just someone who's really, really unpleasant. There is a bit of child murder going on. There's a book called Crooked House, which is one of the middle books, which is quite an interesting one. But it is unusual. You get the odd student, but for a child, this is quite interesting. This is quite new for her. Happens quite a lot in fiction now. But this child isn't a very nice child. This is set up very, very early on. So although it's terrible that child's been murdered, it's kind of okay because she wasn't a very nice one. But you see, this is important because I think this is why detective fiction is so widely appealing, because it's very comforting. So someone who is horrible gets murdered and by the end they will be brought to justice. And that's very satisfying. It's not the challenging book. I like to fall asleep listening to Paul Temple stories, you know, the 1950s, lovely rounded voices. And I just think there's something really comforting. It's very expected. There are no hidden aspects to this genre at all. It's absolutely as you would expect it to be. If you just want a nice warm hug, it's a funny thing to say about a murder, isn't it? But because you know it's going to happen and it's going to happen to the right people, it's okay.
Whereas I quoted the television series, You Have a Policeman, it's very often quite nice people that are murdered, like children. Mm. It's not unusual.
Well, I suppose they're trying to take things in a different direction. Mm. I started watching Broadchurch and finished very quickly. I'm sorry, I didn't want to see a child being murdered.
So here we are, this child.
She announces that she has seen a murder take place and soon after she dies. So it is pretty obvious in the beginning what the motive is for the murder. But then they have to set about working out what this murder was.
So Joyce said that she had seen a murder committed, said Poirot thoughtfully. Yes, she said something of the kind. I wasn't really listening. But you do remember that she said it? Oh yes, she said it. But I didn't believe it, said Mrs. Drake. Her sister hushed her up at once, very properly. And she was annoyed about that, was she? Yes, she went on saying that it was true. In fact, she boasted about it. When you put it that way, yes. It might have been true, I suppose, said Poirot. Nonsense. I don't believe it for 1 minute, said Mrs. Drake. It's the sort of stupid thing Joyce would say. She was a stupid girl? Well, she was the kind, I think, who liked to show off, said Mrs. Drake. You know, she always wanted to have seen more or done more than other girls. Not a very lovable character, said Poirot. No, indeed, said Mrs. Drake. Really the kind that you have to be shutting up all the time. What did the other children who were here have to say about it? Were they impressed? Well, they laughed at her, said Mrs. Drake. So, of course, that made her worse.
This is where the book falls down a little bit, because there do seem to have conveniently been quite a few murders in the district over the last 10 years. So I think maybe Agatha was a bit distracted the week she wrote the middle of the book. So that's where I think it's a little bit sloppy.
Yes, it felt a little contrived.
It did, rather.
But then that's, again, not unusual. When I read a book, I really like to be engaged by the characters. And
yes.
I struggled with this one, and the reason I haven't read one probably for the last 40 years is that I obviously struggled last time. Agatha Christie was offering that sort of comforting thing.
Yeah.
There's a problem. Oh, here comes Poirot, here comes whoever.
Yeah.
It's all going to be solved. We're all going to be happy. And that doesn't particularly interest me. I'm interested in the character and the plot. Mm. Now, what else is in this one that you think that says, here's a writer, it's not just somebody developing a plot that's traditional, a few characters you drop in. Is there more to it?
I'm just going to come back at you there with the character thing. Yeah. You're right that in some of these books, there's a little bit of the two-dimensional character going on because they're not quite as important. So these characters are the same. You don't need to know very much about them. Poirot, you've got a long-term investment in that character, you see, so I think he's hilarious, but you haven't invested that time in him, so you're only looking at the auxiliary characters, really, aren't you? Yes, so she has become famous doing these slightly formulaic books, but it's not just the early spy thrillers that are interesting. She's also done some things now that we would take for granted. She's made people we wouldn't expect to be the hero. Don't underestimate her. She was cutting edge. There's one that I read recently, which is quite a late one, called Endless Night, and it doesn't have Poirot in or Miss Marple. It's kind of a romantic book, but it has an interesting twist. That's one I would really recommend reading if you want something a bit different. She has become famous for one thing, but that's not all she does. I mean, she's a very good writer. She became famous really doing her least good work, in my opinion. And I do recommend you read some of her earlier spy thrillers. But I was quite interested in this one to find a very beautiful piece of descriptive language about nature. Now, Agatha loved Devon. She had a beautiful house down there called Greenways. I've been there and it inspired her to write so many of her books. And I think you really get a sense of her love of the English landscape in the passage we're about to hear. But what I also like about it is sort of underpinning this sinister undercurrent that comes through when Poirot investigates an important landscape in the murder story.
Somehow, he thought, this was not an English garden in which he was sitting. There was an atmosphere here. He tried to pin it down. It had qualities of magic, of enchantment, certainly of beauty, bashful beauty, yet wild. Here, if you were staging a scene in the theatre, you would have your nymphs, your fauns, you would have Greek beauty, you would have fear, too. Yes, he thought, in this sunk garden there is fear. What did Spence's sister say? Something about a murder that took place in the original quarry years ago? Blood had stained the rock there. And afterwards, death had been forgotten, all had been covered over. Michael Garfield had come, had planned and had created a garden of great beauty. And an elderly woman, who had not many more years to live, had paid out money for it. He saw now it was a young man who stood on the other side of the hollow, framed by golden red leaves, and a young man, so Poirot now recognised, of an unusual beauty.
I did catch that myself when I came to that section. And it actually got a little bit more interesting around that time because you started having characters that you didn't really understand quite. I mean, the man who was responsible for the garden.
Yes, he's quite an interesting one.
He's got different levels to his character, I think. Yeah. Which is, and you're not quite sure who he is or where he is or where he's coming from or where he's going to. And that point, it got more interesting. This particular one I listened to was narrated by Hugh Fraser. And I have to say that really helped me because in many ways I wished I hadn't read the book but just listened to the audiobook.
Mm. He's very funny. I loved him in the TV versions playing Hastings. I think he's really come into his own as a narrator of the Agatha Christie books.
You've raised some things which I will look at and I will think, and I'm particularly interested, you say there's some early spy ones.
I would love to talk about The Secret of Chimneys with you.
Well, we'll come back to that perhaps another time in the future. Thank you very much indeed. Halloween Party is on 40 tracks on this CD and that lasts for approximately 6.5 hours. The narrator is Hugh Fraser, and we're grateful as ever to Caliber Audio for providing us with a CD from which we're enabled to take these extracts. Caliber Audio is a charity that provides a wide range of audiobooks for the specific use of its members. These are mainly people who, for reasons of sight loss or other impairment, are unable to read printed text. The recording of this discussion was made by the St. Albans and District Talking Newspaper.